to TTT. We'll start the TechNet in about 2 minutes. 1 minute. Hey, good evening, everyone. This is Gordon, W2TTT. This is the Bergen Amateur Radio Association Technical Net. Are there any stations with emergency or party traffic? Please call K2BAR. So, was a good answer to that question? Alrighty. So, good evening, everyone, again. This is W2TTTK2BAR. And welcome to the Bergen Amateur Radio Association Technical Net. This net is run weekly on a frequency of 146.955, the 2-meter repeater of the Chestnut Ridge Radio Club, located in Alpine, New Jersey. We welcome you to the net. All radio amateurs are welcome to come and join us on the net. This net is, as I say, open to members and non-members alike. It's a little different than most nets in that it's a conversation. It's a conversation about amateur radio, electronics, computers, telecommunications, the natural phenomena that supports our hobby and our experiences, the things we've done, the things we'd like to do, the things we aspire to do, if you will, things we never want to do again. It's all good. As such, you can make comments during the net. If you have a comment you'd like to make, just register it when we check the check-ins. We also check in a little differently than other nets. We check in with our call signs, our names. We indicate whether we have a question, a comment, a for sale swap, or wanted item, and some combination of those things, or none of the above. And then why do we do none of the above? Because we'd like to know if you're there. So it's really important. Just FYI, this net can be accessed using a minus 600 split on 146.955, and of course, using a PLF 141.3. So, with that in mind, we also have another way of accessing the net, and that's via EchoLink. And that's K2 Foxtrot Juliet-L, K2 Foxtrot Juliet-L. And another way of checking into the net if you're not within RF range. Now, let me just take a pause. Alrighty. So, the other thing we do want you to know is that this net is recorded by the folks at amateurradio.tv, amateurradio.tangovictor, and usually a week or two after the net, net recording shows up on amateurradio.tv right on the main page, along with the other 8 years of nets that we have. So you can really get quite a bit of history here. If there's a net or an element of a net you want to think about hearing again, you can certainly go back and do that. Let's see what else. We also have a website, Yahoo group, amateur radio, pardon me, Comtech group, Comtechgroup, all one word, and Comtech group. If you would like to get a list of who's checked in and also some of the topics and other resources, or you have some post net inquiries, you certainly can post them there and get a lot of good, helpful answers. Also, if you're doing some useful things, let us know. You'll see some of that, too. And, of course, the email history and the file section are also very useful there. All righty. With no further ado, let's see about getting this basketball game going, as they say. So, let's see. As I said, we're going to check in with our standby. I'll be right back. I'm going to take this phone call. Alrighty, very good. Oh boy. Alright, so that's good. So let's start with stations whose call signs begin with the letter November. Please call with your call sign, your name, indicate whether you have a question, comment, for cell swapper wanted items, some combination of those things, or none of the above, please call K2BAR at 43 Devils.
K2BAR, this is N2ZZK with a question.
Good evening, Bob. Great to hear you on. That's awesome. We will get to you in a moment. Any other Novembers? Okie doke. Let's go to the W-2s.
W-2JEK, Don with a comment.
WA2QBC, no traffic.
Good evening, Gordon. WA2UMP, Jim in Pearl River, and just listening.
Okay, guys, I really appreciate your you're trying to expedite the check-ins, but it puts me at a terrible disadvantage when you just go one after the other. So let's see. W2JEK with a comment. WA2QBC Bruce with a with just monitoring. Let's see. We also have Jim WA2UMP just listening. Very good. Anybody else?
WE2R Charlie just listening.
Okay, very good. Any other whiskeys?
Uniform 2-0, Randy, Washington Township with a comment.
I got Randy, W-2S, with a comment. And who was the station that just doubled with Randy?
W-2APP, none of the above.
Good evening, Paul. Yes, all right. And you're going to see your name in lights, by the way, tomorrow when you come by my setup. Alrighty. Any other whiskeys?
WE2R. I'm not sure you got me, Gordon.
I do, Charlie. Welcome aboard. Yes, sir. We got you, Randy, and then Paul. Who else? Let's go to the Kilo 2s.
K2EIR, I have a question and I have a comment. Both of these are very low priority. I suggest you leave it for late in the net so we can have better discussion first.
Roger that, Howie. You sound better now that you've had dinner than you did before dinner, by the way. I think the dinner kind of cleared out your sinuses a bit, maybe even cleared your throat a bit, but good for you. Sound a little bit better already. Any other Kilo 2s? All right, moving right along. How about any other Kilos?
Okay. Bennett here. No questions or comments at the moment.
Good evening, Bennett. Welcome aboard. Who is the station double with Bennett?
Kilo Bravo 2, Tango Romeo Whiskey. Good evening.
Good evening, Kai. Now, what's your intention, sir?
None of the above for tonight. Unless if there's something that piques my interest, you know I'll chime in. Back to net.
Very good. And by the way, Kai, I'll see you this weekend, and I think your kids will have a good time. Got to load some apps, though. Alrighty. Do that or bring a GPS or both. Anyway. Good to hear you. Anyway, who's next? Any other Kilos?
Okay, to ZC, Dave. No questions or comments.
Very good, Dave. Welcome aboard. Any other Kilos?
KD2GAA. Name is Paul. Good evening, Gordon. None of the above.
Very good, Paul. By the way, doubles are now up 5-4. Very good. Alrighty, very good, Paul. Any other, any other Kilos?
Kilo Delta 2, Hotel Delta Bravo, Scott Terrytown, just listening.
Good evening, Scott. Welcome aboard, KD2HDB. Welcome. All right, any other Kilos?
Kilo Delta 2, Delta India Golf. Don, listening.
Very well, Don. Just listening.
Sir, KD2DIG.
Very good. Welcome aboard. Any other Kilos?
Kilo Delta 2, Golf Golf Romeo, William and Teaneck. I'll just be listening tonight.
82GTR, yeah, I'm sorry, I missed your name.
It's William and Teaneck.
Very good, William. Welcome aboard as well. And welcome to Ham Radio once again. Any other Kilos?
KD2TTT, here is KD2CAK Mobile. I have no intentions other than to support the net, and I will be moving from space to space and radio to radio, so if I get a chance to chime in, I hope I'm welcome to comment, but I'll wait until then. Back to net.
Very good, Ari. Welcome aboard. Alrighty, any other Kilos? Alrighty, let's get on the on board here with Alphas.
AA2WP, just larking tonight, Gordon.
Good evening, Willie P. Very, very good. Any other whiskeys? I mean, Alphas.
C2D, just larking like Willie.
C2D, so noted. Any other Alphas? All right, any station, any call sign. Alrighty, well, let's get on with the matter at hand. W2JEK, you're first up, K2BAR.
All right, K2BAR in the net, W2JEK. Good evening, everyone. Have a good net tonight. All right, Bergen Amateur Radio Station will be holding its Ham Fest on Saturday morning at the Westwood Regional High School. The VE testing group will start VE testing at 8 o'clock in the morning. So it's the time to get there for the testing. If you're coming for a test, please bring a $15 fee, some identification with photo on it, like a driver's license or a passport, or some other photo identification, or two forms of non-photo identification. And if you are licensed, please bring your license and a copy of the license. And if you're not licensed, you'll need your social security number, or if you wish to not give us that, you can get an FRN number from the FCC. You'll have to give them your social security number to do that, though. And you may use a calculator. The memory on it must be empty. Devices such as a cell phone, iPod, etc., that can be used as calculators are not permitted. And I think that's about how it. The only other thing is that, let me drop it for a second. The only other thing I was going to mention is that the FCC recently came out with a ruling that people who have expired licenses beyond the 2-year grace period, who are the general advanced to extra class, can get back into ham radio by passing the current technician exam, and they will then get element credit for their the license they had. The general class will of course get a general. The advanced class will get a general because they don't give advanced licenses anymore, and the extra class will get as extra. The call sign will be a different one because they were assigning them sequentially, but unless you want your old call sign back, you'd have to get into the vanity program. Back to net, W2JK.
Very good, Don. Alrighty. Anybody have any questions or comments for Don? Alrighty. Well, Don, I do have one question. And that is, the whole question of calculators, is that an ARRL VEC policy? Is that a all VEC policy, or is that localized because of the ability to supervise?
This is from the ARRL VEC. I don't know what the other VECs have to say about it. We're an ARRL VEC group, and it's in their readings. If you go through the thing, it's on the ARRL site. What to bring to a VE session, it will tell you what to bring. And it mentioned calculators only. Back in it.
Correct, AC2T.
Yeah, no, okay. I'm only questioning it because there are an awful lot of, you know, four-function, six-function, you know, calculator apps that you could bring up that just dominate the whole screen. And, subject to supervision, of course, to make sure people aren't flopping applications. I don't really see a harm in it, but I understand. Anybody else?
I'm into JK.
Don?
The thing is a security issue, too. Some of these cell phones have a photo capability. We don't want people taking photos of our exam papers and exposing them, exposing what the questions are on these exams. We need to keep the security there for that reason, too.
I suppose. I think there's actually surveys done, and they figured out that there are questions that actually never show up on an exam, anybody's exam, which I think is amazing, but it is what it is. But again, if the thing is placed on the table, I don't think that can be properly monitored. I don't see a harm in it. As long as the calculator function is inherently constrained to what's normally you have on a calculator. But I hear you. Alrighty. Not my worry, in all honesty. Anybody else?
Bowman?
Go ahead, Paul.
Small thought, which is when do they start legislating for Google Glass and the tech session or in the test session? So it's the Google Glass at that point then, if you've got something reflecting up into your eye and you've basically got recognition software running on the glass itself, it's I suppose it's a whole area that they're actually going to have to look at with that back to net, W2APP, back to KTB Air.
My God, yeah, I can only imagine Google Glass. but anyway, by the way, there are patents out there for an embedded form of Google Glass, so you'd never even know it if someone had a prosthetic, visual augmentation. But anyway, you guys take heart. We're not quite there yet, which is a good thing. Anyway, Don, you have any more?
One thing about you mentioned there are questions that are never seen on an exam. What happens is sometimes due to a change in the law during the 4-year period that question pool was in place, we may have an exam there and they have to change a question. So they don't. They may replace a question. They put a sticker over the question on the original paper. They put a sticker over that has a new question on it. So they do keep questions there. And I think also there is the ability of people who VEC groups, if they want to go through the trouble of making up exams, they can do that. However, they have to have certain portions of laws, certain regulations, certain electrical laws, certain portions of operating practice, etc. However, I don't get involved with that stuff. I get the papers, I get the exam copies from the league. That's what I use. But I've had it a couple times where they did change a law, and I had a change of question, and they put a new question in. And the thing about it is that the answer, it's an ABCD question answer, is the answer. It will have the same letter answer as the original question. That way, when we put the template over to do the scoring, we'll be able to score it correctly. Back to that, W2JK.
When they change the question, do they change the, with the sticker, do they change the answer template as well, or do they just make sure that the answer is also still C, for instance?
No, they don't change the template. We use them over and over and over again. The template is something that doesn't change. They will use it. If the answer is supposed to be C, they will put it on the original question. Whatever third answer is will be answer C. That's what they're going to use, because the template's going to look for the correct answer as answers letter C.
That's pretty good. That makes sense. Makes it simple to administer and change. Alrighty. Anybody else on this topic? Joke. Very good. Alright. Don, any final notes that you want to say? Other than the fact that, what do you want to talk about Saturday?
Well, nothing else. I'd say you were starting at 8 o'clock, and hopefully people will come there. Be there at 8 or shortly thereafter. We'd like to be out of there at a reasonable time, too. We don't want like people dragging their heels walking around the half-fest and then come in right at the last minute when we want to close up shop. So people just keep that in mind, that we sit there for a while and nobody shows up, we're going to close up shop. Back to that, W2JK.
Wait, check in, WI2W.
Hi, Steve. So noted, what are your intentions this evening?
Just monitoring.
Seems to be a popular posture tonight. Alrighty. Very good. Well, we'll get to you in due course. Anything else, Tom?
No, thank you. W2JEK, back to that.
Oh, thank you. That's super. Alrighty. So, let's see, we have, there are 20 of us tonight. That's pretty good check-in. That's a very good check-in list so far. Alrighty, thank you, Don, for your kind comments and your patience with my question. Alrighty, let's see, we have Bob and 2ZZK, your question, sir. G2BAR.
N2ZZK to K2BAR. My question is more or less astronomical, with like astronomy. How many hours, minutes, and seconds are there in a day?
This is 86.4. I'm sorry, I don't have my four-function calculator handy. Let's see. So it's 3,600 times 24.
I was just wondering, I know when I was a youngster, it was told to me that it was, I guess that was back in, 69 or 68. It was actually 23 hours, 56 minutes, and 4 seconds to a sidereal day. The Earth's rotation to a certain star. I was wondering how, if that, seeing that the Earth's rotation is slowing down, what it is at this particular, at 2014, what the numbers are now. Back to net, N2ZK.
Oh, on a sidereal day. Oh, that's a really good question. So let me see. Let's look that up. That's always a good question. Jenkins.
Comment.
Go comment.
This is Randy. Wikipedia reports that it is 23 hours, 59 minutes, 4.0916 seconds.
It's only 4.59 and 4 and change seconds. 4 point what was that?
56 minutes, 4.0916.
Wow, so it's almost a whole minute short.
To JK.
On.
I heard things on there, especially every once in a while they announce it, like in Hokkaido, the Weather Bureau announces the weather on TV announces that they're making a change every so often, periodically. And of course, you got to remember they have the leap year, too, every 4 years, too. So that takes into the, you have to take that into consideration, too, that they are dealing with this problem. I know that there's, for the scientific purposes, I do think they do have a way where they make an adjustment, so to speak, for that difference in the time that occurs. Back to net, W2JK.
That's great stuff. That's absolutely great stuff. Yep, yep, yep. That's pretty good. Anybody else? Alrighty. That's a great question, Bob. Thank you for that. It's got everybody out of their comfort zone a little bit.
Gordon, could you give me the exact seconds again? Come back so I can write that down. And ZZK back to net.
Yes, sir, I can. Oh, geez, I was just reading it myself, and I know what the heck did I just do with it. Okay. 23 hours, 56 minutes. No, wait. I guess typo. It's 59 minutes. 4.0916 seconds.
So, 23 hours, 59 minutes, 4.0916 seconds. And back in 19, I guess we could say 58, the figures I was given then was 23 hours, 56 minutes, and 4 seconds. So the Earth slowed down that much in this period of time, back then.
That's 56 seconds.
Yeah, Randy, I'm reading 56. You said 59. Which did you mean? You meant 56 minutes, by the way, Dave. Randy, you want to try it?
Sure, yes. It's 56, 5-6 minutes, and 4 and a fraction seconds. So the sidereal day is not quite, but almost 4 minutes short of the 24-hour clock time day.
Yeah, that's pretty interesting. And I guess we keep it generally in line with our leap years, and then every so often we either pass on a leap year or add a leap second, depending on what we're doing.
The thing to keep in mind is that this is a mean sidereal day, and in other words, an average sidereal day. I suppose if you were to look at it closer, you would account for the fact that the Earth's rotation and orbit around the sun is not quite as uniform as one might suppose.
Oh, no, not at all. Yeah. It is definitely, well, first of all, it's an ellipse, not a circle. Let's start there.
It is an ellipse, referring to the orbit around the sun. However, the two foci of the ellipse are not very far apart. I mean, it's very close to being a circle.
Yep. Absolutely. Anyway, for those who care, I'm adding the length of the day to the notes from tonight. That was a good question. So I the notes so that people, you know, can have access to that. Anyway, anything else people would like?
Comment, K2EIR.
How we go?
Along the same lines, sort of related, the equinoxes, you know, spring and fall, you know, the shortest day and the longest day type of thing. The time of sunset, you would think that, for example, the shortest day would have the earliest sunset of any day surrounding it, but that's not the case. There is a difference between when the earliest sunset is and sunrise that differs from the shortest day and the longest day. And I've got the reason why, but it's another one of those interesting little quirks. K2EIR.
And God knows we need more quirks, right?
Quarks.
Oh, we're not going to quarks. This will turn into another TechNet, which will remain nameless if we go that down that route.
Okay, agreed. K2EIR.
Alrighty. Anybody else on astronomical issues? By the way, it's a 6-4 final. Devil's got an empty net goal. It's going to be a final anyway. There's 1 minute left in the third. So, it's all good. All good. Camilleri scored it, which is even better. Alrighty. Let's see. I forgot what I was going to ask. Alright. Our next check-in is, comment is Randy. W2S, K2BAR.
Thank you, Gordon. Good evening to everyone on the net. Now, Gordon, how's the audio this evening?
Awesome. You have great audio.
Great, thanks. I guess I didn't bump any of the knobs this week, so glad to hear that. Speaking of audio, last Friday I brought in the partially completed microphone distribution panel that I'm building for people to view, and it's actually looking pretty good. I'm real proud of how it turned out. Regarding that, Tony and to SIQ made an interesting comment. Since the one I'm building is flat and narrow, it's made to fit a rack. It's a 1U panel box. For his application, he wanted to be able to test 5 or 6 microphones and not mount it in the panel, so using some sort of square project box. He wondered if a rotary switch would be available instead of jumpering it the way I am. So I did a little quick research and did discover, in fact, that Mauser carries what seems to be a suitable rotary switch. The only downside to that approach is that the switch itself costs about $55. So it's not an inexpensive proposition, but it's certainly doable.
Wow. So they have a switch. How many positions and how many, you know, poles do you need?
Tests and test results, many of which have been posted on the ComTech group last week. And the current beta development version 3.0.0 looks extremely promising. We're having a lot of success with it. Not all of the bugs are out of it yet, but it's looking pretty good. And I'll be doing some more testing over the next several days and hope to report those results. But so far, so good. In fact, I was able to establish a tunnel between one of my Ubiquiti nodes here and a node Texas, and when I was able to do that, I was able to bring up visibility to and access something like 36 nodes in Texas, in addition to the five nodes that I was running here. So exciting times. We'll be making use of that facility here in New Jersey very soon. Back to Net.
Yeah, absolutely. I had a question for you about each topic, and I'm sure others do too, but first one was, how many poles and how many positions do you need for your switch?
Well, for the microphone audio switch, I decided to follow Bob Heil's example, and for those of you that are interested in the source, it's episode 109 of Ham Nation, where he describes it fairly thoroughly. And so in his example, he's got two microphone inputs that are switchable, you know, mic one, mic two, and the output can go to one of six rigs. So two inputs, six outputs, and that includes switching the push-to-talk line as well as the audio. Back to Net.
So two poles, six position?
Well, if you were to use a rotary switch, what you would do is you need three poles and how many ever positions you want, because what you need to do is isolate the audio from the microphone. So you have to switch in a balanced mic, the plus, the minus, and the shield, and that has to all three of those lines have to be kept isolated from the box as well as any other circuitry. So a three deck switch with, I believe it had either 10 or 12 positions, you really had no choice, was available, and it looked like it had suitable isolation to work in this application.
And you need a fourth pole for the PTT line, right?
Well, typically what you would do is you would typically only have one PTT line, usually a foot switch or a foot switch that you're using on your desk or a desk switch, and that can be run in parallel to all of the radios. That typically you're only keying one radio at a time, or you could have you're right, you could have another pole position to switch that to the particular radio that was selected.
The key point is, the balanced microphone, you have to switch the plus minus and ground, or plus minus and shield, if you will, which also is the ground for the PTT. Oh boy, that's pretty exciting stuff. Alrighty, that's good to know, to say the least. My other question was, we were talking about tunneling, and I really think we need to think about how to do that, not only separating what I call the local tunnels requirements, but also from the far away tunnels. I think we need to do that. And number two, I think it would behoove us to ultimately set up a couple of people to do that, so that way if one tunnel path goes away, we'll get one another way. I think people should take on, either a local tunnel function or a far away tunnel function, at least for now, and go from there. I mean, nutcases like you and me, we might want to take one or two remotes in addition to all the locals, but gee whiz. I think it's a production thing. We should view ourselves as backup to whatever else is done by others. But this is very exciting. Very, very exciting stuff. I was absolutely thrilled to be in Pittsburgh, be able to get you that information on Saturday, and by Sunday we had a partial solution, and by Monday we were reveling in our success.
It's looking real good for all of the modern Ubiquiti equipment. There's still some buggy parts of it, in particular with the older Linksys routers, but I'm sure we're going to get that fixed as well. And as we had discussed, gosh, it's almost 6 months ago this spring, talking about how to manage these kind of things. I think we're at that point. We'll need to get together very soon to figure out what kind of tunnel management and actual networks we choose to set up. But there probably ought to be at least three, a network that really is the, let's call it the production network, the official network that's available for emergency services, you know, in support of our communities, that sort of thing. A second local development and test network, if you will, where folks that are interested in actively trying things out here in northern New Jersey, we can provide a network facility where things can come on and go off without harming anything, and we can conduct controlled tests, and then perhaps a very small but smaller test remote network where we can hook up the people here, at least one node in New Jersey and a few in Texas, people out in California, and I know there was at least one fella in Italy, in northern Italy, that wanted to connect as well, and we could make that available on a fairly modest basis. Back to net.
Yep, absolutely. That's exactly right. And again, we're going to want to have some isolated stuff, but I think the sooner we get the production nodes up and networked with some backhauls on the internet, I think will be that will cause its own internal fire to get people motivated and excited. Start seeing five, sixes, and eye stations, in the neighbor node list. That's going to be quite a smile moment, to say the least. The Linksys stuff has got some issues, but it's all good. It's all good. Just for reference, the episode 109 of Ham Nation on YouTube, and it's the Bob Heil segment.
And that's the correct episode, and it's the it's about, if I recall, it was something like about 15 minutes or so into the show. So if you're looking at it on your computer, you can kind of like fast forward or move the little cursor over to around 15 minutes, and that's where he's describing the little the microphone panel. WU2S back to net.
Excellent. Excellent, excellent, excellent. That's really good to know. Anybody else? Alrighty. I'm just writing some notes here. By the way, if anyone wants to join the ComTech group, please go there on Yahoo Groups, or shoot me an email at whiskey2tango@awrl.net. That's W2TangoTangoTango@alpharomeoromeolima.net. Alrighty. Anything else from you, Randy?
Oh, thank you. That's it for this evening.
Okie dokie. I did not hear back from our site contact yet, so I think we're going to pass on that one opportunity for this weekend, but we can go back another day and take care of that. Very good. For reference, there was a question last week about the the joys and pleasures of of having a I'll think of it a very nice setup for the jamboree on the air next weekend, week from this weekend, and barring anybody changing the arrangements on me, it will be in Bergenfield at St. John the Evangelist, right out in the parking lot. I have a really nice setup planned. We're going to use an OCF dipole, and we will be set up quite nicely under the carport. And the antenna is going to be an OCF dipole sloper off the school to a local fence line. So it's going to be really cool really kind of a neat setup. So we look forward to seeing you there. If people want to bring radios, I'm bringing my Flex 5000, but if someone wants to bring a different radio, that's fine. Just let me know, and we'll square that away. But we're gonna do it right here in Bergenfield. We get this coffee, 150 feet away, and there's a restroom right there, and people need to do that. So, if you're interested, it'll be set up by 10 a.m. on Saturday, and we'll continue till late in the day. We're not sure how long yet, but we'll work on that. So if anyone's interested, we'll be in a very public place and doing the Jamboree on the Air thing this weekend. We're not this weekend, next weekend. Let me drop it. Any questions regarding Jamboree on the Air? Alrighty, very good. And the other thing to note is that this weekend is Scout Fest for the Northern Jersey Scout Council. We're going to have it at, oddly enough, a non-council camp at Camp Alpine. The GNYC, Greater New York Council's camp on 9W. And we're going to have quite a display there. Unfortunately, it's not open to the public, but I know that Kai and Paul will be there. And probably herding cats, or otherwise known as Cub Scouts, and their parents. You're welcome to come by. I just want to thank Paul and for his donation of a radio. I'd like to thank Randy for his donation of a Raspberry Pi and a kit of a Raspberry Pi, which has some components to work with. I'd like to thank Mike and to YBB, our Hudson Division Director, for his generous donation of an Arduino book and some license manuals to go with those radios, and also for extra flyers above and beyond what they normally can get. So we have a rather full complement of flyers, probably a little bit more than I needed, but I needed more than what the standard offer is. So we have lots of AWRL flyers people want, and also apps. And finally, I'd like to thank K2KJI for his donation of some resources as well, and some presentation materials, and a really super price on some radios, which we also were able to do, so that's also good. So anyway, I just want to take note of that, and again, this shows that this group is quite a heck of a group doing stuff, don't think I got off easy either. I dropped personally about $400 on all sorts of resources and assets to make this really work. So and then my Boy Scout troop is also adventure crew given a little bit as well, so it's quite the collaborative effort to make this a really first class event. And Randy also went, me and Paul both went mesh nodes batteries in Randy's case, so we're going to be doing very fine. with that for the go transmit hunt kind of thing with the Wi-Fi. Alrighty, with no further ado, let's go to any comments on this stuff before we move on.
QEIR.
Yes, Mr. Howie.
Well, if anyone sends in anything about that HR 49, 69, whatever the bill is, for ham operation in deed restricted events, I always think things like you just mentioned and developing new talent, you know, the Cub Scouts and whatever, is really one of the major contributions ham radio makes. Let's not forget who invented the transistor. They were ham operators first, or Joe Taylor with his Nobel Prize and the techniques he invented. And the heart of that is the kind of thing you're doing with the scouts and them being able to operate from their own home. I see a link. Maybe that not everybody does. But if you ever write to congressmen or talk to people, if you can, please mention this link because I see it very clearly. K2EIR.
I mentioned it to Scott Garrett staffers and pointed out that New Jersey's innovation is partially in a very modest way, a product of my being a ham to the tune of 30 patents and God knows whatever else, a few other things that I've done that keep our business running and make things better, and they originate from New Jersey. And oh, by the way, with as a ham radio operator, I totally get it. I'm on board.
Okay, I just have to hope other people get it too. The people who make the decisions, let's get rid of those deed restrictions. K2EIR.
Oh my God, yes. Well, you know what the reasonable accommodation is going to be? You can have a 1 foot pole above your house, you can have a wire, and you can have a 19 inch whip. That'll be the reasonable accommodation.
I hope for a little bit more than that. We don't have to have a tower, but it would be nice to at least have the kind of stealth antennas that many of us have made legal.
I mean, it should be outside, but yeah, I understand.
I understand very well.
Alrighty. Let's see what else. What else? All right, before we go on to you, Howie, let's see what else we have on the plate. Are there any late check-ins or anybody with additional questions or comments they want to register? Alrighty. Well, Mr. Howie, you wanted to be up last. You're here.
Okay, this is K2EIR. I have a comment and I have a question. Again, very light duty stuff, old, very basic. First is my comment. I've been asking around, certainly on this frequency, for advice. I have recently inherited a more modern TV rather than the old analog cathode ray tube TV I had. And since I gave up cable a few months ago, I have gone to looking at on-the-air channels, and I couldn't get Channel 7. I could get, WABC TV. I could get NBC and CBS and a whole bunch of other things, but I couldn't get 7, so I was asking for advice. I finally did get 7 with my $1.49 or $1.29 rabbit ears. It was a very finicky thing in terms of position, and I had a rescan. That was very important to have the TV rescan for channels. So I now get Channel 7. So that's sort of my comment for anyone who has talked to me on this frequency on the air and, or listened on the Tuesday night Rockland Repeater Association net, where I got a lot of good advice. So that's my comment. My question is, does anybody have difficulty soldering PL259s? So that's the heart of the question. Let me just fill in a little background. Stand by.
Okay,
okay. Background is I soldered one tonight, and I did pretty well for a change. I usually take up to an hour. Sometimes I have to try it more than once. And I don't believe in crimping. I really like to solder. One of the little tips I got from a mentor a while back was to use a cuticle scissors to cut the shielded braid and avoid excess strands. So that helped. I just wonder what other people do in the frustration, because another ham asked me, I think he wanted me to go over to his place and do his connector, and I have a third ham that's coming to my place so I can do the connector. So I know other people have problems with it, and I'm just wondering how people solve that. So once again, does anyone have problems soldering PL-259? That's my question. K2EIR.
Well, it's funny you should bring this up, but since K2ZO is not here, I can summarize that unless someone else would like to. You did a very nice little talk on that recently. Anybody want to jump in on that?
K2JEK.
Go ahead, Don.
Yeah, one thing, if you're holding this thing in a vise, put a piece of cardboard or wood or something there to insulate it so that the vise doesn't act as a heat sink and suck all the heat out of the connector. That way you get the heat the connector up properly while you're soldering it. Otherwise it'll take forever and a day to heat the connector and the vise up as well. They don't want to do that. Back to that.
That's a very good point. There is something else to think about as well, and that is that when you put together the connector, you basically, and I've always done this, is you trim things back in such a way as to match the form factor of the actual connector. So, you know, I think your point, Howie, is very good about the cuticle scissors, that are a sharp pair of diagonal cutters. So what I do is, the first thing is I pull back the outer jacket, then I cut back the braid such that the outer jackets will be nested inside the back end of the connector, and that there'll be just enough exposed braid for it to get underneath those holes. Then I trim back the center conductor, the dielectric on the center conductor, to be just a hair longer than the braid, so that way the braid can't wrap over the top of the plastic, even if it should melt a little bit and get embroiled in the center conductor. So, but the bottom line is when that dielectric hits the top of the inside of that connector, that the braid will be underneath the holes and you're good to go. Now, some people pre-tin the braid as well, and pre-tin the center conductor as well before they insert it in the connector for good. That gives it some rigidity and keeps you from getting into trouble. But Jim does not do that. He just trims it back, screws it on, solders. His point is, and why people get in trouble, is you must use really good silver connectors. Do not use junk.
WI2W.
Steve.
Okay. And now for